Hey, it's Mike from Bass Guitar Rocks, and thanks for checking out this training that we're doing exclusively for Bass Guitar Rocks members who have checked out the Bass EQ Secrets product. And this is going to dive a little bit more specifically into live EQ for bass guitar, and it's going to cover four different topics here. We're going to talk about the fundamentals. We're really going to go fundamental on this, like really fundamental. And then, you know your shit. So, you know, the stuff that you should know if you want to even, you know, start getting a good sound, you got to know what your end goal is and what your starting point is and what's the gap between those two. Keep it simple and control what you can. So let's just jump right into this now. The fundamental. So, like I said, this is extremely fundamental. It doesn't get any more fundamental than this. We're talking about you. We're talking about your gear. We're talking about your environment. And we're talking about your audience. So when I say you, if you want to, you know, play the best that you can play and get the best sound, then for starters, you know, let's get you figured out. You know, have you rested yourself? Are you well fed? Are you well prepared for the gig? Have you learned all the songs, all the music backwards and forwards? If you're also a front man in the band, or if you have to you know, do some duties on the mic where perhaps you're announcing a song, you know, do you have all that stuff figured out? So that's the you. You know, also, like, you know, what equipment are you going to need? Are you going to need multiple basses? Are you going to need a fretless bass and a regular fretted bass? Or are you going to need a 4-string and a 6-string or a 5-string or 2 5-strings? You know, all that stuff. You got to know what you need to do the best job that you can on the gig. Same goes for your gear. You got to know how your gear works. You got to know, you know, for your situation that you're in or the type of music that you're playing, you know, is a 6-string bass or an 8-string bass appropriate if you're playing in an AC/DC cover band? Probably not. but I mean, if it's what you got, it's what you got, right? But I mean, just knowing what your gear is, you know, do you have the effects that you need? Do you even need effects? You know, do you need to be wireless because you're also running the sound, or you're also, I don't know, kicking people out of the bar or something like that while you're playing, which I hope you're not doing. But, you know, you have to have the right gear. If you want to get a certain sound, you're going to have the gear that goes with it. Otherwise, you're fighting your gear. And then your environment, too. So, because, you know, the sounds that are going to happen in one room are not going to sound the same in another room. If you're in a tiny little, like, telephone booth, it's going to sound different than if you're in a gymnasium that's nothing but reflective surfaces and it's a big rectangle with all your sound waves bouncing around and causing chaos. So you have to know what your environment is. Maybe you're playing an outdoor gig. Maybe you're playing a venue that's got a reputation for having lousy, you know, noisy wiring, and there's all kinds of 50 cycle hums or whatever it's called. You get this buzzing sound whenever there's nothing going on. It's just buzzing. So, you know, knowing your environment will help you get the best of your sound. If you know where you're going, you know if there's a big stage, you know if there's a small stage, you know if you're going to have, you know, the configuration of your band, right? Like if you're playing in a 7-piece band, and you're got to expect that you're going to have a heck of a lot less room to put your stuff. So these are all, you know, part of the fundamentals of your sound, where you're going to be, what you're going to use, you know, how it's all going to sound in the end. And then your audience too. You want to play for your audience. So if you don't intend on having an audience, then it can be argued why even go and play live anywhere. Just stay in your basement or stay in your garage or stay in your bedroom. You know, so play something that's appropriate for your audience. Play the music, play the bass that's appropriate for the music that your audience has come out to see. They're not here to see, you know. My big pet peeve, it's going to come up later on, is, you know, bass players who decide to do all kinds of slap and pop and all this kind of stuff whenever they're doing sound check, and they probably don't even do that during their set most of the times. Doesn't make any sense for people to do that. So it's also like knowing your audience, you know. If you're playing in a funk band and they're not, you know, doing some sort of Cliff Burton style wah and distorted bass solo, like sort of metal music playing, might not be appropriate for your, even if you can pull it off, you know, maybe that's not the right place to do it. So, but those are some factors to consider when you're looking to get your live sound. So that's just overall fundamentals. Know yourself, know your gear, know your venue, and know your audience. But building on to that topic, we got know your shit. So hopefully I didn't offend anybody with that, but the very, very basic form of this is that you should be reading your manual. I know it's probably, you know, going to be complex and boring, but this is your instrument, this is your gear. If you can't get excited about the gear that you bought, then I don't know what you can possibly get excited about. But this is, it's all about, you know, getting the best sound. To do that, you need to know how your stuff works. So read the manual. Nowadays with the internet, you know, there's a good chance, even if you're buying something used, you can grab the product number, hop on Google, put it in there and see what comes up. And I'd say more often than not, you're probably going to find some sort of a manual that you can download, even if you haven't purchased the amplifier or the, whatever piece of gear yourself, even if you are buying it secondhand or third hand or something like that. So this applies to, you know, knowing how your bass works. So, you know, if you have an active bass or a passive bass, you know, how does it work? Do you have, like me, I've got a bass that does both. So there's a way to turn on the active. You got to pull up on the volume knob, and that throws it into passive mode. Or if you have it all the way down, it's an active mode. So how do you do that? Does your bass even do that? Is your bass passive or active? These are things you're going to need to know if you're going to get the best sound out of your bass, right? So, you know, depending on if you have an active bass, you can have all kinds of different, you know, boosts and cut for, you know, across bass, mid, and treble. So you need to know how your bass works. You need to know what those little switches are, what they do. Otherwise, you could have everything set the wrong way and making your sound like crap. So start with the bass, you know, figure out how that works, read the manual. If you don't have a manual, even just experiment and just, you know, single out one knob at a time and just find out, okay, well, this one, it's getting louder, or this is getting bassier, or this is getting more trebly, and just kind of map out how your bass works. Know how your amp works. So obviously you need to have your amp, you need to know how it works. So you know, amps are getting more complex as time goes on. They're throwing everything, you know, once upon a time you used to have a separate cabinet, you used to have a separate amplifier, and you used to have a separate preamp all by itself, and you'd connect all these things together, and you'd, you know, and then if you had effects and everything else, that would all be part of your sound. But now they're increasingly, everything's getting smaller, it's getting more powerful, it's getting more complex. So know how your amp works. This goes back to the Bass Amp EQ article for beginners, when I'm saying, you know, you need to know how to get to ground zero with your sound. So you need to know on your amp, are you setting everything at 12 o'clock? Are you setting everything at, you know, is it a 0 to 11 scale with 0, you know, at the far left, and at the far right is where 10 is? If that's the case, then you need to turn all your preamp kind of EQ boost, your mids, your lows, your highs, all the way down, so that way you're not you know exactly where ground zero is. So because if you're going to start boosting anywhere, you want to know where you are without any boost at all first, just so that you've got the most clean sound possible. On top of that, a cool thing that certain amps can do, they used to do, I don't know if I've seen it as much nowadays, but there are some amps out there where you get you can get like a foot pedal, and the foot pedal can, you know, maybe mute the amp or switch channels if you have a multi-channel amp. So you can basically almost use it like an effect. You can have one channel that's like distorted or whatever for maybe a certain song, or a different EQ shape on it. So if you have, say, you take a bass solo and you want to have like a really kind of slap friendly sound with the mid scoop, the big, you know, smiley face that we always talk about, and then you have a regular channel that you can toggle between, and that's sort of more, you know, maybe it's got the mids boosted. So, you know, so different things like that, you can really help you get the most out of your amp. And also another thing with amp, we've talked about in some of our recordings, you know, setting the amp based on the room, and then using your bass to alter your sound based on things like where your hand position is on your plucking hand. You know, if you're close to the bridge, it'll be more trebly, a little more punchy, and then if it's closer to the neck of the bass, it'll be kind of more of a bassier, kind of mellower kind of sound. And right in the middle will be kind of the blend of those two, depending on what kind of bass you're using. But in general, that concept applies. So you could do that without even touching an amp, right? And that will affect the sound of your bass, and the kind of sound and the feel that you get across, or even the emotion that comes out in your music. So, you know, but doing that and then knowing how your amp works, you can get the most out of it. And same goes for the effects. I mean, you want to know, at the very least, especially with bass, you want to have a clean sound. You want to have a really good sound. You want to have everything bypassed, and then you want to have the ability to dirty up that sound if you like. So it's good to have, you know, whatever your first pedal is in the series of your signal chain, or your, you know, if you plug directly into your amp and then you use an effects loop, that's one way, you know, that your signal going into your amp is 100% clean. But you want to know basically how all those effects work, because, you know, some effects might be boosting, some might be cutting, you know, and you want to be able to use them in tandem together to create an overall sound that you don't have your effects settings fighting with your bass onboard preamp settings fighting with your amp settings, right? So that's why you want to know how all that stuff works, so you can make the most of your sound and make the biggest possible impact. So, and like I said earlier about knowing how your bass works, you want to know whether it's active versus passive, but you also want to know about your strings, because, you know, there are round wound, half wound, and flat wound strings. So round wound are, you know, basically if this was sort of a spectrum, you'd have round wound tend to be the brightest, and flat wound tend to be the bassiest or the least kind of bright sound. And then, I mean, you also have the metals that make your strings, you know, the steel ones may be slightly more brighter than nickel strings, and then, you know, which are slightly less than something else. So if you have nickel flat wound strings versus round wound steel strings, you know, you can, and half wound are sort of right in between. They're not fully flat, they're not fully round. So, and these also have an impact on not only your sound, but also the impact of your fretboard. If you play a lot, if you play hard and you use round wound strings, you can actually wear down your frets over time. And I guess flat wound are slightly more fret friendly, but you need to understand those things, not just play whatever you find. Because, you know, if you want a flat wound sound and you got round wound strings, it's just not going to happen, right? So Those are things to keep in mind when you're kind of figuring out your sound. So, like we said about the amp, you know, knowing where ground zero is, and then also in combination with your amp, because I mean, amp is sort of a catch-all phrase a lot of people use. They'll just say amp, and like I said before, you know, back in the old days, you used to have a cabinet, an amplifier strip, a preamp strip, you know, and then you've got combo amps, which have everything combined. Nowadays, your amps generally have, unless you're going out of your way to just buy just an amp by itself, most amps today will have, you know, the amp part of it and preamps and possibly effects and different things in it too. So depending on what you have and what kind of sound you're going for, then you also have speaker cabinets. So if you want, you know, if you're playing in a reggae band and you want to have like really deep sound, then you may want to have like a single 18-inch speaker, if you're not looking for a lot of clarity, you know, and maybe that with a 15-inch speaker or two 15s and an 18. You know, generally the bigger the speaker, the more low range you're going to get from it. So if you're doing that, or if you want something really kind of, if you're playing like really punchy kind of fast music and you want something with smaller speakers, but then if as you add up speakers, you know, you have four 10-inch speakers versus one 15-inch speaker, you can sometimes get more low end from those, from four 10-inch speakers instead of a 15. So anyway, we can go into that like big time deep. And hey, I should have probably said off the top, I'm not an audio engineer. I'm not like I don't have a PhD in acoustics or whatever. So, you know, I just know from what I've read and from what I've experienced and what works for me. Take it and leave it as you will. And I highly recommend, no matter what anyone tells you, experiment with it yourself and see what your results are and see if you like what's going on. That's always the best way, as far as I'm concerned, to figure out what you like and what you need. So anyway, learn about these things. It's not rocket science, but it will again help you to get to the ultimate sound that you want to achieve. Also, you know, understanding basic acoustics for bass. So like, again, like I said, I'm not an acoustic whatever analyst or whatever they're called, engineer, but you learn that the bass frequencies, like some basic facts, you know, the bass frequencies carry the farthest. So if you're playing a private party and you want to get shut down real fast, crank your bass as loud as possible. That's the one of the first things that's going to travel, you know, beyond the confines of your room or anything like that. So I can give you a quick little tip. If you're practicing bass in your room, for instance, and say you're in college, or I don't know, you don't want to wake people up or whatever, I still don't recommend doing this in early morning. But what I used to do when I first started out to muffle the sound of my amp was I actually would lay it down the back of the amp, like so the speaker was facing upwards, and I would put it on my bed. So what happened is basically the one side of the amp is being completely muffled by the bed. It's absorbing the sound waves. And then with the amp shooting upwards, you know, so it was a combo amp, so my ears were more likely to hear it because it wasn't like hitting me in my knees. And since it was shooting upwards, it was less likely to bother the people downstairs. Now, it's still bass frequencies. Another sort of basic thing about bass frequencies is that they are omnidirectional, so they go in all directions at once. And I mean, and since it travels the farthest, And it also requires the most energy to make low frequencies loud. So that's part of the reason why if you're a bass player, if you got a 1,000-watt amp, you could be playing with guitar players, you know, who are using whatever 100-watt amps or 200-watt amps, and they might be able to get plenty loud. But if you want to have a tight, responsive, and deep bass sound, you may need to have, you know, 400, 500-watt amps, you know, just to get the right sound, depending on your application. Now, I got a 400-watt amp back in the late 90s, and that was not ultimately extreme, but they were harder to come by back then than they are now. I'm constantly amazed by how loud amps are getting and how light they're getting at the same time, which is kind of cool. But if you're just starting out, you're just practicing, you know, you don't need a 400-watt amp. But, you know, if you're playing live and you're playing lots of shows, then it's kind of like, you know, I kind of look at it the same way as the engine of your car. You know, if you're driving a lot at high speeds, you don't want to have a small engine that's barely, you know, that's working really hard just to maintain the speed limit. You want to have a bigger engine that's going to do it easily, so that way it's less wear and tear and it's going to last longer. So that's kind of the way I look at powering your bass amp. Basic EQ terms. So, you know, things like, you know, mids, highs, lows, and boost, scoop, and cut. So somebody says, the sound guy says, you know, boost your mids. Well, I mean, sound guy's probably not going to say that, but they say boost the bass, you know, then that means obviously to make the bass louder. Scooping is another way of saying reducing or cutting, and then cut as well. So they say scoop the mids, as I kind of said earlier, that sort of that happy face. It kind of comes from the whole having those EQ strips where you have like an individual slider or fader for each frequency. I have one of those. If you check out the Bass Amp EQ download, you'll see a picture of a Trace Elliott amp, and that one's got the 12-band EQ on it. And so like that, it would be like scooping it so they look like a smiley face when all the faders are arranged in a certain way. So just kind of knowing that. Mids, lows, highs. Sometimes amps will have different ways of saying the same things, like mid, middle, or treble, bass, and middle, or I don't know, those types of things. So just kind of understanding what they mean, where they are on your amp, and maybe on your effects and your bass, so that way you can, you know, if you're boosting the highs, you can boost them in all the right spots or cut them in whatever spots. And understanding a solo versus a bass sound or a band sound. So this is important, because what you realize when you start playing with other musicians is, you know, if you've been playing on your own for any amount of time, you're in your room, maybe you got your amp up on your bed, like I said, these are very specific applications. So this is your, you know, your particular room, your particular bass, your particular playing style, and it's on your bed. So once you go out and play with other people, you may suddenly realize that you're in a big loud room and maybe you can't hear yourself anymore. Suddenly you're not hearing the bass or whatever. So you're going to have to make adjustments for when you're in a band. And it's also going to depend on, you know, if you play, you know, a certain style of music on your own, and then you play, say, reggae in a band, you know, that's going to be a different thing. If you're playing metal in your bedroom, that's, you're going to have a different sound than when you're playing reggae with a reggae band, right? So just understanding, in general, you know, a lot of times when your bass will sound good with a band, if you solo your bass, it sounds kind of shitty. It's kind of just one of these weird facts of life. However, if you have this killer bass sound when you play solo, most of the times it does not survive interaction with a band. For whatever reason, which sounds amazing on your own, which is usually because a lot of times you're scooping out the mids, and the mids are what really bring the bass to life when you're playing in a band, because they're sort of uncontested frequencies, especially if you're in the rock space. A lot of, you know, distorted guitars, they kind of start going into some bass frequency territory, or they're like really high and screechy, especially when they're doing a solo. So if you can fill in the mids, then the bass is going to sound killer. You're going to hear what's going on, you're going to hear yourself, which is always good, and you're going to provide support at the same time. You're not going to be fighting for space in the treble or the bass, but the main thing is you'll be heard, and you'll also be heard you'll get more of that clarity and distinction. You won't just be like a wall of like the low end it gets at times. So those are sort of some different concepts of playing solo versus playing with a band. And so, like I said, scooping the mids when you're solo, that's sort of a bit of a cliche, but tends to happen a lot because you're not competing with other instruments. So scooping the mids is fine. But when you're in a band, you know, a lot of times you need to boost the mids, or else you kind of get lost. And then last part of this section is understanding the gig requirements. So again, these are different scenarios you run into. Are you playing an outdoor barbecue and there's like no PA? Are you playing a stadium and you're going to be using in-ear monitors? Chances are it's somewhere in between. Is there a PA system? Are you going to have monitors on the stage instead of in your ears? Are you going to be able to do personal mixes? These are all things that you want to know before you get to the gig. And you want to at least understand, you know, if you're playing with in-ear monitors, then maybe you need your amp to be on the floor of the stage so you can feel the rumble. And you go, because sometimes one of the complaints about in-ear monitors is you feel slightly detached from what's going on because your sound is so isolated. So sometimes, you know, it's putting your amp on the floor, or, you know, almost like sitting on your amp just to get those vibrations and just kind of feel what's going on. So that's just one example. Stage monitors are something else. You know, sometimes you're playing a big venue, then they've got a PA system, and your amp, where when you play smaller venues, your amp is being part of the sound that people are hearing, and in the big venues, your amp is almost just a monitor for you to hear yourself. So that's going to be going to have a pretty big impact on how you sound and how you approach the way you play on the gig. All right, so keep it simple. What do I mean by keep it simple? Eliminating the variables. So basically everything that you introduce into your signal is one option for it to break down. So if you have one bass, you have one patch cord, you have no effects, and then you have your amp, that's a relatively simple that's a very simple setup. So, you know, if something goes wrong, chances are, okay, maybe it's either the bass, it's the cable, or it's the amp, right? Simple to fix. But if you have, you know, 50 effects, then, you know, any one of those effects could be screwing something up, or any of the cords in between those effects running one from the next could be, you know, causing a trouble. And then if you got an active bass, and then all your, maybe your battery is dying on your active bass. So keep it simple, but not so simple that you're hurting yourself. You know, use what you need, but, you know, eliminate the stuff that you don't need. And I even go so far as to say, you know, when you're preparing for your show, you know, going back to the fundamentals, like knowing who you are, knowing your gear, knowing the venue. Well, one of the biggest variables I find for me that I have a hard time relaxing until I get to the gig and I unpack my gear and I verify that my gear is working. So, even if I get to the gig early and soundcheck isn't for a few hours, I've been known to, find an outlet somewhere, tune up my bass, and, plug in my amp, and even if I'm not playing anything, just power it on just to see the nice little green light come on. So I know, okay, hey, my amp powered up, my amp works, because, last thing you want to do, show up early to a gig, wait around for sound check, and then when you start playing, find out, oh shit, something's not working. So eliminating the variables, that applies to having a huge amount of gear. If you don't bring what you don't need, we've played with bands before that are, they open for my band in the past, and maybe they're only playing for 20 minutes, and it looks like they brought every piece of gear that they've ever owned, and probably unnecessary, especially if you're opening to bring tons and tons of gear. So planning ahead again, that was sort of like I said, knowing the venue. So if this venue has really shitty sound, or they don't have a PA, so you're gonna make sure you bring your powerful amp, not some little practice amp. Having extra batteries, cables, strings, an extra bass if you need it. All depends on how high profile your show is. This will help you play better because you're not going to be worried about these things failing you, right? Because you'll know you're covered. And giving yourself more time than you need. So again, that's kind of like in relation to getting to the venue, like map out where it is if you've never been there. I always recommend, whenever possible, check out the venue in advance of your show if it's a new place, so you can kind of get an idea of how everything works, where it is, where you're going to park, where the load-in is, all that kind of stuff. That just used to give me a lot more peace of mind going into the gig. So again, like I said, before, I said eliminate the variables, but then use what you need. So if you need 2 basses, if you need 10 basses, then bring them. 10 sounds a little bit excessive, I have to say, but use what you need. But, don't cut your foot off just to try to make your sound, don't reduce effects that you technically do need or that are going to make you perform better or sound better. But at the same time, just use what you need and nothing more, nothing less. Soundcheck 101. So this is what I kind of talked about earlier, is that especially when it comes to bass players. So this is a bonus tip for bass players. If you're going to do a show and you get a sound check, and you have like a dedicated sound engineer, they're going to want to hear the bass for a couple of seconds to make sure everything is right in the mix. So you want them to obviously do a good job. You want to sound the best you can do. So, do yourself a favor and just play what you play. Like if you use effects on your bass, then you may want to do sound check with some of those effects, so that way your sound engineer knows. Because effects on bass, they are more common now, but the bass player generally isn't super relying on effects. So you want to just make sure this sound engineer goes, okay, this bass player is going to be using effects, and adjusting for that. Because I've had I had the bass player go leave for a smoke or go to the bathroom, and then I step on an effects pedal and there's screeching everywhere. So, ideally what you do, obviously if you're in like a professional touring band, you'll have a stage plot that you give to your sound tech that kind of maps out how many musicians in the band, where the stuff is set up in relation to the stage, so they know, okay, stage left is where the bass player sets up or where the guitar sets up or whatever, how many mics you need, all that kind of stuff. And you want them to know, ideally you'd give them all those kinds of things so they know that, okay, this guy is a bass player who does use effects and you know they're crucial. These songs are written around an effect that starts a song. Then you kind of want to make sure that you're sound checking and you're testing that stuff off. But sound check is not a time to show off or to take a bass solo. I can't, like I said, you know, before, I can't tell you how many times you're doing a sound check and the bass player decides, well, this is the time for me to whip out every little flea, you know, slap and pop bass thing that I've ever heard in my life. And then, you know, maybe they're like a straight ahead band that plays like, you know, AC/DC or Tragically Hip or something. It's almost like four on the floor, you know, straight, you know, eighth notes or whatever, and it's, you know, you're pedaling on the E string most of the time, and then meanwhile you do sound check and you're slapping and popping. So it doesn't, you know, you're not impressing anybody. And what you're possibly doing is hurting your sound, because you get your sound guy who's EQing your bass thinking that you're going to be slapping and popping it. It's probably going to sound pretty shitty. He's going to have to readjust everything if all you're doing is playing, you know, the E string all night and just, you know, pedaling on it. So anyway, that's my take on Soundcheck 101. And, you know, you're not going to win anybody over with, you know, playing just the stuff that's on your set. Or, like, you know, if you got just bread and butter, meat and potatoes bass lines, hey, who cares? Be a good bass player for the song. Be a good bass player for the band. If you want to do something solo, then go ahead and do that. But don't be a show-off to the detriment of your own sound and your band. All right, so that brings us to the last item, which is control what you can and accept what you cannot. So this is just some general advice for you know, anyone who's going to be starting to play live a little bit more. You know, just accept that you are human. You are going to make mistakes. You are going to screw up. Just learn from it and move on. Don't beat yourself up. Also, you know, something will go wrong. It's Murphy's Law, right? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong eventually if you do it enough times. So you can eliminate, like I was talking about earlier, about eliminating variables. You want to do that because that reduces the amount of things that could potentially fail on you. But by the same token, there's a certain amount of stuff that doesn't matter how much you prepare for, you're just not going to be ready for it. So just, you know, the show must go on, do your best, and, you know, you'll hopefully live to fight another day. You may be embarrassed, okay? So I've had some embarrassing moments on stage, one of which was, I'll tell you really briefly. My band played in London, Ontario. We're based here. We live in Canada. And there was a bar there called Stonehenge. So based on, you know, the triptychs and everything in the real UK. And so it was kind of had, I guess, like a Stonehenge kind of motif in the background or whatever. And we were playing that gig. And somehow, so back in those days, we were playing like hard metal and stuff, music, hard rock and all this, and I had long hair and the singer had long hair. We're a three-piece band, so me and him are rocking out on a certain song, and somehow we got a little too close to each other and my hair ended up getting entangled in my guitar player's guitar, like right near, like up on the neck or in the headstock or something like that. So I got stuck to it, and luckily he somehow noticed that we were stuck together. And so we're both playing, we didn't stop playing or anything, but I was kind of trying to casually, you know, untangle, you know, trying to pull my hair away without scalping myself at the same time. And it was pretty funny. Eventually, it felt like forever, I got detached from the guitar, but it felt like forever, and there were like these huge long hairs dangling off the guitar player's neck of his guitar there. He kind of laughed and pointed at it while we were still playing. I remember seeing these hairs just hanging off. And so get through the song, and then, you know, hey, you see the footage afterwards, and you kind of, sometimes you're surprised the things that seem like front and center and life and death and noticeable to you is not so noticeable for other people. They don't really see it. So being embarrassment, it just kind of comes with the territory. You're going to be up in front of lots of people. Something's going to happen sooner or later. Just don't worry about it, and just know it happens to everybody. So that's what I say, you know, it's never as bad as you think. You will get over it. Keep at it. You'll get better. So you'll learn how to not, you know, headbang close to your guitar player's headstock like I did. So that's pretty much it for this Live EQ tutorial. If you have any questions, feel free to hit me up at mike@bassguitarrocks.com, and we can I'm happy to answer any more questions that you may have about getting a good bass sound, whether it's live, whether it's, you know, just on your own, or whether maybe it's recording. Happy to share what I know with you guys, and but that's pretty much it for right now. So thanks for checking this out, and hopefully, you know, you put this together with what you've learned in the other two videos and by reading the Bass Amp EQ guide for beginners, and I believe you're going to be in way better shape to come up with a great bass sound that works, whether you're practicing in your room, whether you're practicing with a band, whether you're performing or recording. So anyway, thanks for checking this out. Again, if you have questions, send them to me, mike@bassguitarrocks.com. And I'm always willing to do another one of these or do further updates based on the questions I receive. So thanks for checking this out, and talk to you later. Bye.